Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
Lethal simplicity. Yeah, I like to score fast. It's hard not to be a Noles fan. Get Florida State back. I want a damn good defense. We're still undefeated. Blame no one. Make no excuses. Do something.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast. Once again, I'm your host, Jason Staples, and this podcast is brought to you by Luis Marquez of Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville, Florida. If you want the very best possible listing with professional, smooth walkthrough video and top-notch professional-grade photography, list your house with Luis and Keller Williams and make sure that you get it sold for the best possible price. Or if you need to buy something, go through Luis. Nobody will outwork him. Once again, this is the guy who, as I've said before, made sure to fertilize FSU into the side yard of his neighbor after the his neighbor who was an Auburn fan, after the national championship win in 2014. So, yes, January of 2014, remember, not so the 2013 season. So this is the kind of guy you want to hire if you are a Florida State fan in the greater Jacksonville area. Anyway, and actually, I'm going to put an image of that picture up on the website so you all can see Lewis's handiwork there, which I still think is hilarious, quite frankly. But let's go ahead and get to it. This is mostly a mailbag show. I've had so many questions collecting, and I need to get through a lot of this stuff in this show. Obviously, a few pieces of news. There have been several announcements in terms of hires that have happened since the last podcast last week. By the way, also, Happy New Year to everybody. This is the first Unconquered Podcast in the new year, so I hope everybody's year is off to an excellent start. But anyway, there's been several hires that have happened since then. There's a lot to update on since we last recorded. Again, remember the last time we recorded, the best information that I had, I'd mentioned that that a lot of things had gone dark, but the best information was that that the primary target was Jim Leonard, the defensive coordinator from Wisconsin, and that most likely that would be resolved on the Sunday following the Orange Bowl. Well, it did actually resolve, and Leonard turned Florida State down on January 1st, which meant that Florida State had to move on to other names and begin to assess other possibilities at the defensive coordinator position. I was told that the search moved to three different names. Mel Tucker, the defensive coordinator for Georgia, who I'd mentioned previously on the podcast, he had already been contacted earlier on and had seriously considered it and then decided to withdraw his name. But after the Rose Bowl, apparently he wanted back in consideration, so he was back in consideration. Manny Diaz, who it was not entirely clear whether he would fully go through with the interview on that, but he had inquired, and there had been some mutual contact there. And Harlan Barnett, the defensive coordinator from the co-defensive coordinator, but the guy who actually called the plays for Michigan State. And we now have a hire. Harlan Barnett is the hire for defense coordinator at Florida State. Going to be talking about that for the next couple minutes, but a terrific hire, really, in my view. Now, full disclosure, when I found out that those three names were the three names in play, my initial preference was definitely Mel Tucker. This is a guy who has been an NFL head coach. It's a guy who he coached as a defensive coordinator multiple stops in the NFL. And, has been in the Saban style defensive system for a long time, coached under Saban, is now coaching under Kirby Smart. And then I talked to someone who knew more than I did. this is one of those things, it's really important to be able to recognize where our limitations are. And, I feel like I think I know a lot about football, about scheme, about X's and O's. I can generally judge coaching fairly well. But arguably the most important thing to learn is how to recognize when someone else knows more than you do and being willing to listen to that and be swayed by that opinion. And in this case, I talked to somebody who had faced Mel Tucker's teams multiple times in the NFL and was talked out of my my preference for Mel Tucker. I'm not going to go much further than that, but basically this person had very good reasons why he said, I'm not sold on Mel Tucker. You know, basically, we knew anytime we played him that we were going to get specific calls and specific situations. The disguise wasn't there. And for a guy that coached in the NFL, he said, why is it that Kirby Smart has to take over the defense against Missouri, take over the defense at halftime against Missouri, take over the defense at halftime against against Oklahoma? Why is it, you know, that most of the season, the second half of the season for Georgia, that Kirby's calling the defenses? He loses trust in a guy who's got all that NFL experience. That's not what you expect. And he went, you know, deep dive into more X's and O's there, explained some things that again, by experience, he knew. And I went, huh. When I posed, well, what about Harlan Barnett, who's another name that I've heard as an option? He said, oh, man, now that guy, I like him a lot. So even though I was not initially, I would not have initially gone this direction, out of those three, my clear preference after talking to this person who, like I said, in this area certainly knows more than I do, particularly with respect to these coaches, and was able to explain a few things to me on that end, my preference was definitely for Harlan Barnett. Now, the other thing is that Barnett is clearly the best defensive back coach of the group. He's one of the best defensive back coaches in the country. He's a guy who's played under Belichick and Saban. He's coached in a Saban tree defense under D'Antonio for years. D'Antonio runs a variant, a pattern matching Saban style defense, but with very distinctive tweaks, which I'll talk about in a moment. But he's been running that secondary for years up there and coaches those corners up, coaches those safeties up as well as anybody in the country. And so, you know, that's another thing that you're going to see Florida State's defensive backs, the attention to detail in terms of how they cover and in terms of their technique and all this it's going to be very, very good because this guy is one of the best defensive backs coaches in the country, and he's not going to tolerate anything less than outstanding technique from these guys. And he hasn't had the talent, the access to the talent that he's going to have at Florida State. He's done what he's done. He's had multiple first rounders up at Michigan State. He's coached multiple first rounders who were three stars. He's not had access to the five stars to make those guys into first rounders. I'm really curious to see how he does with that. So Michigan State. So there is reason to be very, very excited about that hire for that aspect of things. Now that said, I'm curious to see how much he runs quarters, so cover four as his base coverage at Florida State, because Michigan State under Mark D'Antonio has been very much a base quarters team. They press, they play press on the outside. That's one difference with their normal version of quarters compared to everybody else. Most teams, when they play quarters, the corners and the safeties are at an even level. But basically in cover four, you've got four guys that are responsible for four different deep zones, and it turns into man coverage if you have, say, four verts, four vertical routes. And it's a little different than what you get with, say, a middle-of-the-field close coverage where you have a free safety over the middle. So a little bit different. But basically what Michigan State does is they run quarters much more aggressively than most teams do. So what they do is they'll put their corners up and they'll press man. They'll press the corners. They're basically in press man on the outside, and then the safeties are close to the line of scrimmage, about 9 yards off, sometimes 8 yards, so that they're almost halfway in the box. And they think of it, D'Antonio explains it this way, as you know, I went to a clinic actually this last year where D'Antonio presented on his defense. More on that in a moment, but they talk about how, you know, they are a 9-man front. Like, well, you know, there are people that are 8-man, there are teams that coach 8-man fronts. We run a 9-man front because we're going to have those safeties fitting in the run. What that does though, is that makes you more vulnerable to deep shots over the middle, right? Because if you play action and those safeties step up too quick, and they're also not playing that deep to begin with, and you got a team that's running an outside post over the top or the inside post that's one-on-one with that safety, who's the safety's responsible for the inside vertical. So if you've got an inside route that's running a post route, that safety's responsible for it in effectively man coverage. If those guys aren't elite cover guys, if you don't have great DBs, you're going to get shelled by deep posts over and over and over again. Your corners have to be able to run well enough to be able to keep from being run away from in that without safety help over the middle on that. And your corner and your safeties have to be able to cover almost like corners in many cases. And they have to be able to cover a ton of ground in that case and be able to come up and hit and play physical in the running game. So you're putting a lot of pressure on your DBs, but their view is if you can get the athletes, then now all of a sudden you're presenting a difficult time for teams to be able to run the ball at all. And if you have the horses, now that defense can flex and morph and do things that, you know, you've got a lot of ability to play games up front and do all sorts of stuff because you can trust your guys to win those one-on-ones. Now, that approach is a very aggressive approach, and it does, like I said, give major advantages in the running game. And the clinic presentation that I went to from D'Antonio actually was on how Michigan State specifically defends read option and RPO spread style offenses and how they handle tempo and all that. And they do that as well as anybody. Now that's a huge plus. Barnett is coming in as a guy who knows how to handle the spread option, handle the RPO stuff, handle high tempo spread offenses. He's going to do that as well as anybody. And it's something where they've got a simple approach on how to get signals in, if teams are going fast, how defensive players have to respond and process that. It's a really good system. So that's a huge, huge plus. If you're worried about defending read option, spread option stuff, high tempo stuff, that some of the stuff that Florida State struggled with the most recently, I expect Barnett to do that as well as anybody. But again, you'd better be really, really, really good and on the outside at corner and have some safeties that can cover like that, or you're going to get shelled. All you have to do is look at Pittsburgh with Narduzzi as an example of what it looks like in quarters playing in the South, which is different. See, it's different to play quarters, base quarters like that in, say, the ACC than in the Big Ten, where weather affects the passing game more through the year, where you don't have the same level generally of quarterbacks and the same athletes at wide receiver. You can do a little bit more there. Quality of athletes is a little different. Pitt is an example of what it looks like when you're playing in the ACC and playing base quarters, and they've gotten shelled by some of these teams. And again, it's mostly because they don't have the talent at corner and at safety to be able to do that play in, play out at the same level that Michigan State does. Now, Florida State may be able to do that. I'm curious to see how it's going to work, because if you've got the athletes to do that and you can play those what I call an 8.5, they like to call it a 9-man box, but it's basically an 8.5-man box effectively. Counting that up, if you can do that and play that way against the spread RPO stuff, then you basically can run one coverage, one defense the whole game, and then just call some different games up front and potentially limit what teams can do in the running game out of the spread. And now you're forcing them to take shots, and if you've got the caliber of athletes to stop that, now you're in really, really interesting shape. But again, even at Michigan State, you saw them get shelled a little bit against Baylor, where Baylor scored over 40 in the pass by throwing it for like 400 yards or 500 yards, but they had negative rushing yards and lost the game. So this is the sacrifice that you're potentially willing to make. I'm curious to see how flexible he's going to be on this, whether he's going to go with some more middle of the field closed, you know, single safety coverages, where again, I would expect him in those cases to be very aggressive. I was told to expect him to be willing to have a number of pressure packages, exotic pressure packages and so on, prepared to do that. And if he's going to add those things to the base stuff that he's bringing in from Michigan State's philosophy, then you're looking at an elite defensive hire. So something to be very excited about. I'm very curious to see how they'll run some things in the spring. Very, very, very much looking forward to getting to know how they're going to do this. But I think it's as good a hire as Jim Leonard would have been. And we'll just see exactly how they do some things schematically. Because again, the personnel is a little different than at Michigan State, and some of the teams that they face are a little bit different. So very curious to see how they'll do that. I do still expect them to run more or less a hybrid defensive front where they're going to go odd fronts a good bit, you know, three-man fronts a good bit and four-man fronts a good bit and flex back and forth. That's something Taggart wants to do. And I think I don't think he would have hired Barnett if he was not prepared and willing to go that route. They also hired, let's see, over the last week, they announced Raymond Woody, who we've already discussed on this program because he'd already agreed to come. He just hadn't signed the paperwork and been announced. Greg Fry, who I mentioned previously, is as the offensive line running game coordinator. That was a done deal a while back as well. And that paperwork finally got signed as well. The most recent hire is Alonzo Hampton, who I'd been told a while back, and I think I mentioned him on the podcast previously, was going to be hired to focus primarily on special teams. And it appears most likely, given his background, he was the defensive backs coach at USF. It appears that he would be the second defensive backs coach along with Harlan Barnett. Now, if you're going to make some criticism, if there's going to be any criticism of Willie Taggart's staff, of his hires so far, I think that's the hire that there's some potential reason to question. Hampton is hired as that, again, probably going to be helping with in terms of how the staff has to be composed, probably going to be that second defensive backs coach and not the guy that, say, Harlan Barnett would have brought in with him. You could have potentially had Terrell Buckley, who I know was very interested in that position, but that interest was never reciprocated from Taggart's side, I think because Taggart had made his mind up that Hampton was going to be the guy there. And with Hampton, I think there were just some other options at that spot that it's an interesting hire. Let's just say that. So a little bit less exciting. I'm told that he's a very good recruiter in Georgia. I don't know how good of a defensive backs coach he is. I don't know what's gonna go down here. But in any case, if there's a place where you're gonna critique the staff or any hires that are made, it's that hire, which is really the 10th hire. As things are going to go, you know, that the coach that wasn't on the field previously, he's basically going to be in that spot focusing on special teams and helping with DBs. I don't know whether they could have potentially gotten somebody who would have been a better hire for that. Maybe, you know, again, like a Terrell Buckley or someone like that. At some level, you have to trust your head coach. You have to trust the guy that has worked with people previously and knows what they're capable of. And clearly Taggart is comfortable with Hampton, wanted to bring him in. He was a quality control guy under Taggart at Oregon. And again, was a defensive backs coach at USF. And we'll see how good that hire is later, but I can't really judge it beyond saying, if you're going to question anything, that's going to be the hire to question. And you know, cause the rest are pretty well established coaches. I mean, I think the Barnett hire is an excellent hire. Woody at linebackers is a good hire, who's a great recruiter. Keeping Odell is an obvious one. You know, he comes with the furniture because he's one of the best defensive line coaches in the country. Lockett at tight end, you're stashing a very good recruiter. Pimpleton is a very good running backs coach and an excellent recruiter there. Greg Fry, to me, is a home run offensive line hire. And then you've got the remaining hires to be made. Now, obviously, things have been complicated with Ron Dugans. By the time this releases, it's possible that he'll have made his decision, but obviously he's been kicking this back and forth for a few days now. He's been offered the job. Miami has upped the ante and offered more money on two different occasions. And you have to remember, Ron Dugans' wife is from Miami, and they really like it down there. So, I mean, this is one of those decisions that's not nearly as easy as a lot of fans would expect it to be because, again, there's a lot of pieces in play here. There's loyalty on both sides, very loyal to his mentors and to Mark Richt and that group at Miami, and understandably so. Also loyal to Willie Taggart and some of the people there and the network of former players at Florida State, and Tallahassee is home originally. But again, he's lived elsewhere for a long time now, and his wife is from Miami, so it's just not an easy decision. I think if it's gone this long, I don't know that I expect him to take the job. If he does take the job, then great. You got a great hire, and you pulled that hire from your rival. If not, they're going to have to find someone else. And I'm not exactly sure who that would be at this point. There are a couple other names that have floated. But one of them who is Locksley, the assistant who's coaching wide receivers at Alabama this year as the co-OC and wide receivers coach at Alabama this year. Locksley doesn't want to coach wide receivers if he comes to Florida State. If he leaves Alabama, he's only going to go to get the co-OC or OC title and coach quarterbacks. So, and he can do that perfectly well. Now, he may actually end up getting hired for that at Florida State, but he's not an option at receiver. There's one other name that I don't think is realistic enough to actually mention at wide receiver, so the board then starts to get open. I know who I would give a call. I would look at Kyle Valero, the Dallas Cowboys assistant wide receiver coach, who has 8 years of NFL experience, a guy who coached, he was a student assistant at Florida State previously. He's a guy I'd interview at least. But again, I don't know what Taggart is planning on that. That's just me spitballing in terms of what I would do. One of the guys that I would talk to, because I think he would probably leave the NFL, where again, he's got 8 years of NFL experience. He would probably leave the NFL to coach at his alma mater in that case, and would probably be a pretty good hire there. So, in any case, that's where things stand on the coaching front. They're turning their attention now to get an edge defensive end coach with that, handle the wide receiver coach, and then there's going to be one more hire, probably on the offensive side. I'm not exactly sure what they're going to do with any of those. I don't have good information on any of those at this point. You can keep an eye on my Twitter feed at Doc Staples, and also some stuff updated on Facebook. If I do hear some specific things on those areas, but I don't have anything specific to be able to go with at this point beyond what I've already said. Okay, well, that took a little bit longer than I expected, and I actually went through and did the mailbag portion that I was intending to do on the episode here, and ran very nearly to an hour, and I don't really like doing episodes that long, so I'm going to go ahead and split this in two. This will be I'll release this one today, and I'll release the rest of the mailbag. I'll release the question and answer stuff that I've got separately tomorrow. So we'll go ahead and do that. We'll go ahead and wrap this show now. And once again, this has been the Unconquered Podcast, sponsored by Luis Marquez of Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening.
Thank you all very much, and have a great day if you want to.
I made this.